the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
We're going to talk about what's happening in Ukraine, which of course is very important to this country given the amount of refugees from the country that we host here. We have three guests with us. I'm going to start with Edward Burke, lecturer in World Studies at UCD. Edward, after what Donald Trump said to Vladimir Putin in their 90-minute phone call yesterday, and with the prospect of a face-to-face meeting in somewhere like Saudi Arabia, have whatever slim chances Ukraine had of ejecting Russia from their territory evaporated with Donald Trump almost waving a white flag for them?
No, I think that would be premature to say that. I think, we've listened to quite different statements today and yesterday from, for example, the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, and then the Secretary of Defense, who's obviously in Europe presently. And so we're trying to sort of understand, you know, what's an opening gambit, what's actually serious US policy. And I think it's just premature to say that you know, Trump has landed upon his policy position as yet. Clearly, it's alarming. And clearly, there's a dialogue there that has to be happened, take place not only between Ukraine and the United States. I see Marco Rubio come out today and say there's going to be a new strategic pact to deal with Ukraine that President Zelensky is very happy, you know, says he's very happy about. So there's lots of contradictory noise going on. And so, you know, certainly there's going to be some hard talks vis-a-vis Moscow as well in the future in terms of what might be a sort of landing ground for a ceasefire initially and then potentially a peace agreement in the medium term. But we're a long way off sort of trying to decipher the tea leaves when it comes to U.S.
Yeah, but when Trump and Hegseth talk about starting talks with the Russians, have they not already made an enormous concession that the Russians want by saying that Ukraine won't be allowed into NATO?
I think they have. I think it's very poor negotiation tactics, to say the least. It's absurd to me that you would start sort of conceding points. It's not something that Russia would do. And it's not something the United States, therefore, should ever contemplate. It's very poor diplomacy. So already saying that, you know, Ukraine can't join NATO and, you know, Hegseth coming out, the Secretary of Defense coming out and saying that, you know, 2014 boundaries are, you know, very unlikely, etc. That's not helpful. It's not a great starting point. So they've got off to a very bad start. I think the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, is trying to sort of recover some ground today. And so, you know, again, we're dealing with an administration that is in a lot of flux, to put it negatively, a lot of chaos. And so we'll have to see where they land.
And given that Donald Trump seems happy enough to fight with the European Union, is telling it that he's going to put tariffs on various products, and he's telling the NATO members of the European Union that they're going to have to increase their defence spending. Why is it that he seems far less intolerant of what Donald Trump does?
Yeah, it's. I mean,
oh, sorry, Vladimir Putin does.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, and it's hard to get into the psychology of the President of the United States. But I will say that, you know, the United States needs to stop sort of hectoring Poland and the Baltics, who spend, you know, percentage wise more than the United States in terms of GDP on their defense. So, you know, some Europeans are already stepping up their defense spending because it's an existential threat to them in terms of what Russia is doing, and they take it very seriously. So he needs to stop lecturing Europe. Sort of, you know, there are Europeans who need to, other Europeans, not least our own country, that needs to do a lot more in defense, but he needs to be a little bit, you know, the language is coarse, and it's deeply unhelpful and resented in Warsaw and elsewhere, and it won't do much for American power in the world. So I think that's something that Europe clearly needs to, you know, finally take the message, increase spending, look at our European industrial defense base, help Ukraine build its own industrial defense base as well, because the Ukrainians be crying out for assistance to build up, to make their, you know, to make their own weapons, to actually, and so, you know, European funds, European expertise, private sector can do a lot to help that, but we just need to accelerate that. And we need to also get the UK matched up with EU defence initiatives. That's something the UK wants to do. They've been asking for that now for the last few months, and it's important that we get them on board in terms of, you know, remodelling the European defence sector to become less reliant upon the United States.
Larry Donnelly, what do you reckon is Donald Trump up to?
Well, Donald Trump is trying to live up to a campaign promise, something that he set in stone a while ago, which is that he is going to end this conflict. And it is not the international audience, it's not in Europe, it's not anywhere further afield that he is playing to. He is playing to an American audience of the people who voted for him, who say, why on earth are we sending hundreds of millions of dollars to a conflict that is thousands and thousands of miles away from us and involves us very little when they see this as a European problem. I take Edward's point very well that this is a poor negotiating starting point. If it were the case that Donald Trump is negotiating here in favor of Ukraine, I'm not saying he's in favor of he's negotiating on behalf of Russia. What he is in favor of here is an end to the cessation to the hostilities and an end to American aid and a withdrawal and basically a disavowal of the situation and saying, this is a European matter, let's wipe our hands clean of it, and goodbye.
Yeah, but we keep saying the word conflict. This is an invasion by Russia and the annexation of Ukrainian land rather than being some sort of scrap over disputed territory.
And I beg your pardon on that front. That is none of my analysis is to excuse the horrific event.
No, I'm not giving a joke. I'm saying that this is the way it's now been presented all the time by the Trump administration, that it's a conflict rather than being a response by Ukraine to a Russian invasion.
That is true, but if you look at where the vast majority of American sentiment on this is, that they view this as a conflict that will go on forever and a day, that will continue to usurp American money, that potentially might involve American involvement, and they say, we want out. We want this to be over, and Europe, this is your responsibility. This is not ours. And that is the point of view that Donald Trump comes from. He's not playing to an international audience. He is playing to the people who put him in the White House.
And are those people happy with him sucking up to Vladimir Putin?
I don't think they really care. To be perfectly honest with you, yes, there's a rump who will say that we find that disturbing. What ultimately they want is the United States to say, this is a European problem, we're not spending any more money on this. And they also, a lot of them, believe that Donald Trump, whether through force of personality or whatever the case might be, can convince Putin to step aside. They don't view Putin as the enemy. And again, Matt, one of the big things in all of this, don't underestimate the vast amount of informed or uninformed indifference to all of this. This is thousands of miles away. Americans are saying, solve what's wrong at home first. Get us out of this stuff.
Shona Murray is with us as well, Europe correspondent for Euronews. So what is the reaction in European capitals to this news today?
Well, NATO, it came as a bit of a shock. I mean, I've been in NATO all week, and speaking to diplomats there from the various allied countries, they had very low expectations anyway. They said that a good outcome would be the recommitment by the United States and the Trump administration to Ukraine and to the NATO alliance and to the security guarantees of NATO. And they specifically said they wouldn't be bringing up Greenland, Gaza, Canada. They just wanted to concentrate on the bare bones of Ukraine. And this obviously was amid the tariffs and so on that Trump is applying. And so there it came as a shock, Hegseth saying that it was unrealistic for Ukraine to join NATO because I remember last year at the NATO summit, the big 75th anniversary, it was said that Ukraine was on an irreversible bridge, an irreversible path to NATO membership. And now that was completely dashed. And that, you know, was a pillar of Zelensky's victory plan, that they would have security guarantees vis-a-vis Article 5, at least for the unoccupied territories of Ukraine. So it's come as a huge shock. And I spoke to other defense ministers who were in the room yesterday, who said that they felt that Hegseth was literally there just to deliver the message of Donald Trump, that after they had their discussion, when they kind of responded to him when he was saying, you know, we're not going to go back to pre-2014 borders, that only after that discussion did he look like he appreciated the context from which he was just discussing. So they really felt, well, this guy doesn't really understand what he's talking about. This is just Trump's message of belligerence towards Europe. And then the other point that's been made as well is that, and we heard it there from Edward, you know, America spends 3.5% of GDP, and Hegseth said today, 2%, 3%, 4% is not enough. It has to be 5%. But you're talking about billions of dollars if you're looking at Canada or one of those countries.
And do you feel that there is a willingness on the part of the other NATO countries, particularly those in Europe now, to increase their defence spending, that they will concede that Trump may have a point on that?
Oh, they have conceded that completely. That has been heard loud and clear since 2017 from the first Trump administration. It is a constant chorus. It's never ending. We heard it from Hegseth over the last few days. it is heard. And there are countries like Lithuania, for example, who spend 4%. There are countries who spend more than the United States. But when you're looking at somewhere like Canada, that GDP would be tens of billions of dollars. So in some cases, it's not possible immediately, particularly when you look at the problems there are with stockpiles and defence production and so on. So, I mean, it is problematic. Mark Rutte has said the same thing. You know, he was saying, look, you need to go back to your societies and governments and say you need to shave off potentially education or social care or healthcare because defence has to be the priority. And that's another message. But I think the problem is not just about pushing European allies to spend more. It's about what appears to be the US withdrawing from security guarantees. We heard the Hague said yesterday around troops, whether troops or peace enforcement troops in Ukraine would not have security guarantees of NATO. I mean, that makes things really difficult for the Ukrainians who are deeply disappointed and worried about this.
Okay, back to you, Edward. And this listener says it's a European problem. Why are you always relying on America to get the job done? Why can't the European leaders get it done? I suppose there's historical context for that, isn't there? But do those historical norms apply to the present?
Yeah, I mean, look, we have Europe has been doing, you know, quite a lot in terms of if you look at the United States has spent more in terms of military assistance to Ukraine, but the European Union and member states are not far behind, right? And obviously, if you take in wider, much broader aid to the European government, the European fiscal ability to govern, I mean, then the European Union is a very significant actor and has you know fundamentally. You know, has unusually, very rapidly changed its way of doing things in terms of, you know, managing to move funds to Ukraine since 2022. I think we need to scale that up again. Part of the problem is that Europe's defence sector is incredibly siloed. It's inefficient. European Defence Agency has never matched its potential in terms of harmonising procurement, in terms of making European defence spending much more efficient. And allowing European militaries and European military assistance to be, you know, easily deployed elsewhere. So this is. I think the High Representative, I think the European Union is very aware of this, and I think we'll see more moves in the coming months. The urgency of Trump has certainly put defence right up to the priority, and I think we're seeing that at the moment in terms of EU summit agendas, and it's putting us in Ireland under a lot of pressure as well.
In what way?
Well, for example, if it comes to funding the Ukrainian military to fight back, we presently don't fund Ukrainian weapons or ammunition. For a very wealthy EU member state to opt out of that, I think if you talk to, you know, Baltic, you know, ambassadors from the Baltic states or, you know, members of the Polish government, they find that, you know, unthinkable that we wouldn't sort of rise and show some solidarity to Ukraine, especially at a time when support from the United States is so ambiguous.
But what about our military neutrality?
Well, you know, I think we're an aligned country. We've always been an aligned country. And I think from Sean Lamass in 1960 up until recent interventions by the Taoiseach in talking about our political alignment with the European Union, we're not perceived by Russia as neutral. We're not perceived by China as neutral. And we're fundamentally not neutral because we're aligned with the European Union and we're integrated with the common foreign security policy of the European Union.
But we don't fight.
Well, I think we need to step up. I mean, telling Ukrainians now that we have no money for them to fight back against Russia is not, I don't think, a principled or indeed an interest-based decision on the part of our government.
Yeah, Larry, what do you think America makes of our military neutrality here in Ireland? Because we have our position in relation to tariffs and taxes and our position on Palestine and Israel. Would they also have a view, negative view, perhaps in the Trump administration about our defence freeloading?
Yeah, I mean, well, I think more broadly speaking, you know, the view in the United States, whether it's correct or incorrect, is that there has been too much freeloading by the European Union writ large in terms of defense. And that perception is there, and it's there strongly. And I need to say that it doesn't just exist on the political right. I think if you polled across the ideological spectrum in the United States, you would find that fairly broad. I don't think it's particularly directed against Ireland. I think you raise Gaza and other things. That potentially may be a lot more troublesome for Ireland, especially as St. Patrick's Day and all the other wrinkles we have ahead of us. That might be more troublesome. But Irish neutrality, I wouldn't imagine, poses a very big issue in America.
Sean O'Murray, you're at a NATO event, and of course Ireland is not there because we're not part of NATO, but do you get the sense as well that Edward has just pointed out that particularly amongst Eastern European countries and Central European countries that they're not necessarily appreciative of Ireland's willingness to stand back from financing defence against Russia?
It's a really interesting question because I try to figure this out a lot. You know, it doesn't come up very specifically, but certainly Ireland's voice is diminished in Europe. And I think it's because we bring very little or nothing to the table in Ukraine. Now, at the same time, we don't block anything and we do provide money for the European Peace Facility, just that we spend it on non-kinetic goods for the Ukraine war. But it is recognised that Ireland is one of the richest countries. And this is an existential crisis for countries, particularly close to Russia. And they're saying, where's the solidarity? Because Ireland got so much solidarity from countries who had no close consciousness of the Good Friday Agreement, but also had relations with the UK vis-a-vis their citizens living there. And they stood by Ireland throughout that. And that is what the whole point of being the European Union is. And I think that is something that is certainly irritating for those countries. I mean, I did an interview with the Lithuanian Defence Minister yesterday, and she was talking about the fact that Lithuania, you know, in living memory has such terrible memories of the Russians and the Soviets and their presence there and sending people to Siberia and raping women and so on. That happened to her mother. You know, and then they're saying, well, look, we feel like we are actually in imminent danger here if Trump does back off on NATO. And Ireland is sort of sitting there saying, sorry, we're neutral. Obviously, we're not comparable to Hungary or Slovakia, which is actively hostile to Ukraine and Ukraine's interests, but we're not helping either.
Okay, listener says it's a sellout by the United States, and given what we know of Trump's ethics and morals, you have to wonder if it is a literal sellout. And another one here is, well, no, can't read a couple of the other ones that have actually come in. Okay, we leave it there. Shona Murray, Europe correspondent of Euronews. Larry Donnelly, law lecturer, University of Galway, political columnist with the journal.ie, and Edward Burke, lecturer in war studies at UCD. Thank you all for being with us.
The last word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.